you for joining us for another episode of The Garden Pod. My name is Amy Marsh, and today I'm joined by my colleague Paloma. Hello, Paloma.
Hi, Amy.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Would you mind starting with just a quick introduction to yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Paloma Lozano, and I'm part of the World Languages faculty. I teach Spanish, but I can also teach French. In the past, I did that. Here I teach from primary all the way to A-levels.
Yeah, thank you very much. And today, even though you're a language teacher and we've spoke about languages before, today actually we're going to talk more generally about that idea of lifelong learning, in particular ongoing academic learning for educators. So would you like to just tell us a little bit about your educational path and why we're talking about this?
Of course. I'm going to start from the very beginning.
Okay.
So I completed both my primary and secondary school in my hometown, San Roque, in southern Spain. And in terms of my academic childhood, I would say my parents did the best they could to stimulate my intellectual needs, together with a couple of really special teachers that I can remember, and I was really lucky to have them at high school. At that time, the ability to speak English was extremely valued for Spanish speakers, and since it seemed that I was an able linguist, my parents and teachers encouraged me to apply for a scholarship to study English in the UK during summer breaks. And because of the good grades I had, I was granted this scholarship for two summers in a row from the Spanish government. And I spent two summers living with a host family in England and improving my spoken English. It was then that I realized the way I was being taught this second language at school was not really effective, because I had been learning the language since I was 8, and I was 15 then, and still struggled to understand and communicate with the locals. But this was a life-changing experience, as I had the chance to learn about a completely different world, different to my southern village at the border with Africa and Gibraltar.
We're talking about lifelong learning and the idea of adults who are kind of in full-time employment continuing to learn. But actually, listening to that, you obviously doing additional learning and extra learning even back when you were in high school. So yeah. Maybe you are kind of the epitome of a lifelong learner. that's a really nice start and a bit of a setting then for the idea of learning how to be a teacher. How did that experience shape you?
Well, having this high-level language skills was really important, and it made me realize that to access better opportunities, I had to enhance that. And during the last 2 years of college and university, I studied a variety of languages: Latin, Greek, Ancient Greek, for A-levels, English, French, German, although it was only 2 years after learning German that I decided that my life was too short to be able to speak that language fluently. So I wasn't planning to live in that country. And then after receiving my grades for baccalaureate, I had a focus on languages and humanities, I moved to study English language and literature in Granada, also a very renowned city in southern Spain.
Yeah,
it was a 5-year degree. I studied linguistics and pragmatic studies and second language pedagogy, Chinese literature even.
Wow.
But once I graduated, I had one thing clear in my mind. I wanted to be a second language teacher. So I embarked myself into the next journey, which was doing the PGCE, the postgraduate course in education in the UK. I studied in the University of Portsmouth, and completing this course was probably the most challenging thing I had done till then, as it involved not only loads of hard work, as every teacher knows, but I was studying and working at the same time, and it was a whole new educational system for me in terms of learning about the national curriculum levels, the different criteria, the way the schools work as a whole, And it was really different from my experience in my home country.
And for people who aren't teachers, there might be an outside view of just you need to know like your subject, like you can speak Spanish, so therefore you can teach Spanish. But it doesn't work like that. There
Not
are exam specifications. There's a huge amount of things you need to understand about how people learn, how memory works, how the brain works. So there's a lot of research and there's a lot of learning to go alongside how to teach. So you've done your PGCE, and what happens next and how do we get to kind of the point we're at now?
I taught at different schools in the UK and recently here in Southeast Asia. I've been completing a wide range of professional development courses and participating in lots of conferences because I think it's so important to keep recycling yourself and making connections with other colleagues who are doing a similar thing as you is the best way to contribute to your own growth and ability to develop the career and the path that you choose. Then last year, I enrolled in a master's degree in international education with Sunderland University. Completing an MA is something that I've been wanting to do for a really long time, but life always got in the way. And finally, I made the decision. And the reason why I'm able to do it now is because the garden is granting me the capacity for it, not only because the school contributes to it to financing some of it, but also I believe this school is the optimum environment to carry out this kind of endeavor because teaching staff is always interested and ready to learn. If you try something new, people are going to support you and it can enhance your practice, the experiences of our students, and it's just a wonderful experience.
And I agree with you in terms of the staff that we've got here. We have, I can't remember off the top of my head how many, but we have a very significant number of staff doing further qualifications, and it's very common to hear people talking about their studying, their research, all of those sorts of things, which I feel like I didn't experience in the UK particularly, although I might now, I don't know, but... It definitely feels like it's quite a supportive environment for that kind of further study.
I agree. I feel like there is a real companionship when I share what I'm studying at the moment. There's always somebody who offers something or feel free to let me read if you need an opinion. So that is really, really supportive.
And so a PGCE, just I didn't say earlier, but that's a postgraduate certificate in education. That's kind of a teaching qualification. To be a teacher, in from the UK anyway, you normally would have a subject degree, then your PGCE, and then you can stop there, right? But as you just described, you are going on to do a master's, which is a postgraduate qualification. What do those sorts of qualifications look like? Because it's not quite the same as going to university for 3 years. And
There is a lot more independent work and you are kind of riding your own journey. So you pick the units of the modules that best apply to how you want to further your career or what you want to become an expert in. And then you have more one-to-one work with your tutor and what other people are investigating. And the beauty of this is that you can just delve deeper into something really specific that you're passionate about. It's a chance to become an expert, as I said, in a field that interests you. And you can do research, you have opportunities to constantly trial your critical thinking. And I think, in my opinion, is a cognitive process that we should all exercise more often and try for our students to do that as well. Recently, I carried out a case study about the impact of questioning techniques in the classroom to bring in those students from the margins and enhance their critical thinking skills. So I linked this case study to our internal professional development so that my work aligns with the school's needs as well. And this research and observation cycle not only granted me the opportunity to learn from colleagues and other subjects, as I was observing other colleagues, but also really inspired me to trial a range of techniques in my everyday teaching. And I could notice it had an immediate impact. It is true that there is a lot of reading to do when you're doing a postgraduate qualification like this. And it's key that one finds the time. You need to allocate time weekly and space to learn and contrast literature. But if it's something that you enjoy, then it's not such a burden, really.
Yeah. And that is a concern people have about doing something like a master's, is that there's a lot of academic reading, lots of theory, and that they're not going to actually get any practical techniques from it, but instead they're just going to be reading pages and pages of literature. How do you make that link between the kind of academic theory side and the practical classroom?
I reckon the academic always links with the practical. You just need to find your way around it.
Yeah.
Every study or technique that I've read about makes me reflect on what I do in my classroom. And the whole point of reading and learning about something in depth is to see the effect or the resonance that it has in reality. Because at the end of the day, you are the one who has the capacity to apply the theory and validate it or refute it.
Absolutely agree. Can you give us a concrete example of what you've done then with something you've read or something that's some literature that you've engaged with? How has that changed your practice?
As I mentioned before, when I was researching about questioning techniques, there's so much theory about it, and some of the theories are quite prescribed, and they tell you exactly the kind of wording that you have to use or the sequence of the questions that you need to ask. And some of the more modern literature, I think, is a little bit more organic and dynamic in the approach. So I realized that just by changing little words in my questioning, like, for example, at the end of an explanation, when you ask, do you have any questions? Of course, the students don't want to have questions because they want to pretend that they know. Instead, if I ask, what questions do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm opening that door for them to actually feel okay that, yes, it's okay to have questions after an explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's every time we say something as a teacher, we can be making an implication, like, do you have any questions, implies, did you not follow and understand everything I said, and therefore you need me to do extra work?
Exactly.
Whereas what questions do you have is a really positive way of inviting questions, like the students should have questions, so you get something
that's
quite
right.
Different from it.
Yeah.
As well as that, obviously there's loads of positives. You did say earlier you've got to make time for reading, and you've got to actually do a lot of reading and engage with it. Are there other challenges? Do you ever kind of regret the fact that you've signed up for this quite intensive postgrad qualification?
I have to say, I do not find the time to get bored. It's a demanding job that takes a lot of your energy on a regular day, let alone when we have events and everything else that happens in a school. And that together with family and social life, everyday affairs. So it's definitely the busiest time of my life. But to be honest, I do not regret having taken this step forward. I think it's the right way to recycle myself, keep learning, and also is a valuable example for our students and my own child, I think. I believe that for him to see me wanting to learn and studying, even when I already finished uni and it looks like I should be done, it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, and that's so important, that if we talk in school about producing lifelong learners, people who engage with learning because they like learning for its own sake, and they like that, you know, you're not learning to take an exam or to get to the end or finish. You're learning because we benefit from learning. And as teachers, as parents, as adults, children see what we do and we are models. And
definitely.
So we need to live those values.
Exactly.
So it's so valuable, I think, as you said, as a parent, to show your child, well, actually, I'm learning as well, and I'm choosing to as well. Are there other benefits for people who are kind of maybe considering any further education, so anything kind of post-grad, or even maybe somebody who's already in work but might be considering doing a degree, all the way up to somebody doing a PhD or something like that?
Well, definitely, you will be up to date with the latest trends and studies and explorations, and the evolution of any field is constant. So
yeah.
It makes you be in that loop and understanding the things that you do in your daily basis in your jobs. As for us as educators, it's true that it takes a great deal of commitment when talking to other colleagues here at school who are also taking this opportunity. Is we all agree that it's almost like a love-hate relationship because you have to commit to sparing enough time. However, this is how one, if it is something that you love, then it should be enjoyable and it can take your career even further and aspire to different opportunities in life.
Yeah, absolutely. There's that practical side of having qualifications, being able to apply for, you know, promotions or other things in your career. But then there's just that part that we've talked about more about actually enjoying learning and really developing that understanding. And it's always hard to find time, but there is always time.
There is always time.
It's how you allocate your time.
Exactly. And as soon as you embed that routine in your life, it just works smoothly. What I do at the moment is allocate one weekday and one weekend day, a few hours, either in the morning or afternoon, and just delve into the reading and into the thinking and into the planning. And then when it comes to my classroom practice, I've got all these ideas in my head, so I feel really creative and it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, and it's two things. One is the habit, having a structure and being in a good habit. And the other one is just the fact that if you can set time aside for things that are important, even when they're not urgent, then, as you say, then during the week, you're actually seeing all the benefits from doing that as time goes on, rather than rushing at the end to
exactly.
read all this stuff.
And what happens with these courses online, because I presume people would do it online, is that all the materials are released in advance. So you can really start ahead and use your holiday time to leisurely read about case studies or articles around that topic area. So if you just organize yourself a little bit, it is doable.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're just about wrapping up. Is there anything else that you would like to mention?
I just want to reiterate that I strongly encourage people to take on that journey if it is in their head. It's never too late. We will always be very busy anyway, but once you're into it, you will see the difference and it makes in your daily practice. And it will, when it's your own challenge, curiosity and determination, you will excel at what you do.
Yeah, that's a really lovely point to end on. Thank you so much, Paloma.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.